Swift flows the tide to the sound of the bell. Is that a name it is tolling as the flow it doth swell? It rings once more. Oh, hark to its knell. The name it is tolling is that of Bruno. He was of all men the most gifted, the most avid for glory, the least likely to compromise. Like a colossus, he bestrode his times, ushered in the new age of invention, a bold age, a glorious age, when Leviathan should float on water, bridges launch themselves shining from crag to distant crag, when iron horses should snort rampant across the land, proof of man's dominion over profligate nature. He was Isambard, Isambard Kingdom Brunel. A titan among minnows was he, Isambard, Isambard Kingdom Brunel. He created the new world to be. As young men are, he was arrogant in the flower of his youth and new to the field of praise. Vaunted ambition drove him on, and native asperity. In the realm of Hades, his father, Mark Isambard's Thames Tunnel, he started his career. By the guttering light of candles, his men hacked away at pestilent mud. Foul vapours assailed them, disease and malodour. These old Father Thames had collected in his bed these past 1,000 years. Banes he flung at the interlopers, ravening for victims. The miasma invaded their lungs. They swooned, their fingernails rotted, dropped off, sores suppurated on their limbs. Still he drove his father's, Mark Isambard's, tardy tunnel on, an excruciatingly slow testudo. In this task, none had succeeded. Dark were their prospects. The backsuck of water squabbled scant feet over their skulls. Yet he did not skint his time, his youth, his health. 5 days without a break he spent with his men, snatching naps on the spoil platform. Gravatt, Beamish and Riley, his faithful lieutenants. "She's giving way!" Came the frantic shout. 3 times the foul tide swept in. 3 times it swept them away. 3 times it inundated the works. Evil wights stalked this hubritic labyrinth. Minotaurs bellowed and thrashed in underground caverns, feasting on flayed, bubbled flesh. 6 men drowned. Still they crawled on. Hercules would not be up to this task. In bravado, they held a banquet. The Coldstream guards played. But Brunel, no Theseus he, the Minotaur outbellowed the bold brass. Amidst martial shouts he threw Brunel down, flung him unconscious into putrid slime. Many feet he fell into a water tank. Gasping, he was fished out. Malevolent red flowers bloomed in the knotted fist of his gut. He spat blood. The financiers backed off. They bricked off the wormhole, that bright passage into the realm of possibilities, retired for the while, beaten, undone. Sculpt in iron, her delicate tracery floats o'er Avon's tide. Brunel was long dead ere his plans went ahead, but the Clifton suspension bridge is still Bristol's pride. Westwards ho! Went then this modern Odysseus, followed the route of the invader, the conqueror of these isles. Saxons, Danes, Normans marched this route, pushed the natives off the rim of the known into the mountains of Wales or the gnashing sea. Spat out of the belly of the Thames whale, he shook the clay from his feet, clambered on shore. He clamped a cheroot between his teeth, settled his stovepipe on his head, stuck his thumbs into his waistcoat. His wide gaze took in Clifton, Bristol, the Avon Gorge, a place high above the sucking waters, where cliffs frowned on treacherous Avon as she writhed in her serpentine coils, aching for the open sea. he stood, gazed, and submitted 4 designs. From that very first emergence, we are called, impelled to heed. We must travel to lands unheard, unseen, whose vague outlines shimmer always before us. Will they host our dreams? A bridge, the burghers of Bristol wanted, but not any bridge. A suspension bridge over the Avon Gorge at Clifton. The great Telford pronounced on the designs. He threw them all out. Who is this young pup? He snarled. Brunel, indeed. Spans ranging from 760 to 1,180 feet? Impossible! My Menai Bridge has a clear span of 600 feet, the longest in the world. Ipso facto, the longest possible. I will not be outdone. Oh, quite by chance, I happen to have my own design right here in my back pocket. Why don't you commission me? Brunel threw in the towel, departed up north, seeking work, visited the fair Ellen. The Bristolians threw Telford out, chose the young pup. Where? Skeined in iron, his great bridge still in Bristol looms, his first child, his darling. Outlined against cliff, brow-beating rock, she soars from ridge to ridge. Far below tumbles muddy Avon, fecund with history. Her sullen tides bear the ghosts of slavers, their press-ganged bully boys chained to the idols of early globalism. Westwards wends the bright track, following the sun's path o'er vale and dell, and the name that it whispers from beginning to end on every strait and bend is that of the incomparable, the exalted Brunel. This also he foresaw. A shining Apollo-lit spider's web, a great iron road, billiard table smooth across the meadows of England from London to Bristol, down which the Moloch of commerce was to roll. Swaying, humping, future-fraught dragon engines, scorching comprehension with their speed, battering apart the tectonic plates of time, their inhabitants sipping coffee at 45 mph. The Great Western Railway. Would stone support him? Iron bend to his will? Brick obligingly lie? London would not grasp this nettle, but Bristol. Jones, Harford, Guppy and Tothill neutralised its sting. The merchant societies and the corporation gave their support. Brunel they invited to apply, but sought to tie down, impose conditions. The route I survey will not be the cheapest, he proclaimed, but it will be the best. He shrugged off their chains. Meekly they fell into line before his self-confidence, arrogance, genius. There is a tide in the affairs of men, which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and in miseries. Thus was this metal-clashed Adonis unleashed. He seized the moment. Great it was to be, and great indeed, the finest work in all the land. Vindicated at last, ready to take up his right and proper place in society, he took his darling Mary Hawley to wife. Domesticity danced her bright tracks around him. He ploughed straight ahead. For the love of fame and our great master's name. Thus John Hammond, Isambard's resident engineer in the London division of the GWR. Neither great nor western nor even a railway, sniped the Liverpool mob, his opponents up north. He had a mere 10 weeks to get his case together for Parliament. With Brunelian snake oil, he buttered up the landowners, bluffed the belligerent, bludgeoned the weak, beguiled the public into buying shares. En avant, ran his motto. He took up quarters in a black four-horse britchka nicknamed the Flying Hearse, complete with bunk, workroom, and 50 of his trademark cigars. For 40 days in the legislative desert, he fenced with Merriweather, the devil's advocate, riposted, thrust, counterattacked, delivered un coup de Jarnac, hamstrung them. His interrogators were left floundering. This was a high-class public show indeed. Members of both houses came to watch the performance. Asked how he had managed to stay so cool and collected during such hostile questioning, he replied, "Because they could not possibly know as much about engineering as I." Stone would support him. Iron bend to his will. Earth move at the wave of his hand. He clamped his mind and body in the vice of his will. Mighty abutments flowed forth. All saw them realized. Bridge upon bridge darted over river, road, canal, the flattest arches ever seen, still standing today. Embankments reared over marshes, strove for mist-haunted corners of old England, cuttings knifed through downland. Gooch, later Sir Daniel, developed the engines and running stock. Obsessive about detail and being in control, he drove his contractors, the Mackintoshes, George Burge, into the ground, standing on them, beating his chest, howling, "My will be done!" He pushed through the box tunnel, a five-year battle with impregnable rock, flooding water. Navvies toiled 260 feet below ground, 4,000 at the last, 100 died. Then the battle of the gauges. 4 foot, 8.5, or 7 foot. He could not stand against the tide. This one, the most ingenious inventor, eventually lost. As his granddaughter, Celia Brunel Noble, said of him, "The one thing Brunel could never foresee was the defeat of his superior ideas, and his unshakable belief in their final triumph made him impatient when held up by what were, in his opinion, removable impediments." Yet today, his great line still runs from London Paddington via Reading, Didcot Parkway, Cheltenham, Bath. Your next station stop is Bristol. Temple Meads. Coffee, sir? Oh, sails there yet a ship at sea? And is her engineer aboard? What figurehead adorns her hull? And what might she be called? Mayhap she is the SS Great Britain, or perchance Leviathan. Still the bright fish of engineering marvels flickered tantalizingly ever before him. His mind grew topsails, bellied out, scudded before brainwaves, mental tsunamis. Oceans boomed and sang in his soul. Blue devils drove him on. En avant! He spurred on. Iron was to be made to float on water. It was Brunel who realised that the carrying capacity of a boat's hull increases in cubic yards, whilst the surface of the hull opposed to the water increases only by square yards. That is to say, a hull could be built large enough to carry all the coal required, plus a sufficient payload of passengers and cargo, for a long sea voyage. Thus was the ground set for the SS Great Britain, the first of the ocean-going steamers. Arise, O mighty one, cellular in construction, with transverse watertight bulkheads, screw-propelled, 289 feet by 50 foot 6 inches by 32 feet 6 inches, displacing 3,618 tons of all the world's ships, by far the largest. Bristol built, Bristol launched, Bristol's pride. In Jeffrey's dock, Bristol, her birthplace, she stands today. For 37 years, she ploughed the whale's way to America, the Crimea, onto Australian soil from her iron womb, teemed England's excess, England's unwanted, the steerage class passengers, freebooters, buccaneers, deported low lives. Forth spewed those seeking a better life. Forth strutted toffs, administrators, to lord it over them in the colonial surface. Until, at last, the fate of all that is born, made, created. She was unborn, unmade, uncreated. Black coal clogged her lungs, wheat chaff constipated her gut. In Sparrow Cove in the Falklands she was beached, pierced with spears, left to die to the outlandish braying of penguins, far removed from the bright chucklings of blackbirds, bleak her Antarctic dusk, endless the soughing of the wind over her promenade decks. Here she rotted, forlorn, for 3 times 11 years. Then she was redeemed, rescued, towed home to Bristol. Now, immobile in glass, she dreams of dancing over glacial green whilst dolphins pilot her home. A dread shadow slips silently over the horizon. Leviathan, she's called. He has nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, by his nemesis appalled. His ambition had the bit between its rambunctious teeth. It ran hot along his nerves, excoriated his body, flayed his mind. His weird compelled him, a gnawing demon feeding off his life force. Rest was for lesser orders. His was the life of a slave, he complained. Relentless, his nemesis slipped silently over the horizon. Leviathan! Dread vision! The waves part before you, and the book of Job saith, will thou play with him as with a bird? Out of his nostrils goeth smoke, as out of a seething pot or cauldron. He esteemeth iron as straw, and brass as rotten wood. He maketh the deep to boil like a pot. He is king over all the children of pride. Leviathan, the SS Great Eastern. Mighty, your 8,500 horsepower engines to propel you over the ravenous deep. Indomitable, your double hull construction, more than 4 times as large as the Great Britain. Indeed, king over all the children of pride. But his pride she broke, O ill-spectred dream. Brunel conceived her, Russell built her, Russell broke his back on her. She was ill-omened, ill-fated, ill-temperedly built. Leviathan! She was first named, then the SS Great Eastern. Sailors say twice-named vessels bring bad luck. So it was to be. At her launch, she smashed a man's legs, then stuck fast on Brunel's iron runners.
If something won't move, why, apply more force, his friend Robert Stevenson advised.
A philosophy perhaps more apt for young men. They believe the universe will give way before their swank. 3 months it took to get her into the water, 3 months of winds to freeze the kidneys, 3 months of rain to shiver the timbers, 3 months of howling winter to petrify the bowels, 3 months of sniping in the press, ever eager to shatter an idol, bring him down. There is a picture of Brunel taken shortly after the launch. Propped up against her funnel, he barely stands, at 53, gaunt, a withered stick. Immediately after the picture was taken, he collapsed, was carted off to his sick bed. There he lingered. 6 days later, his soul ship, the Great Eastern, exploded off Hastings. Her feed water heater ruptured. A withering burst of superheated steam boiled alive. 5 stokers screaming, they leapt into salving water. When told the news, he turned to face the wall. Soon after, his soul departed this life. In the end, it ever comes that the frame of the body fragile yields, fated falls. Yet when all the works that man has made are ranked each in their turn, those of Isambard Kingdom Brunel the highest crown will earn. Vaunted ambition drove him on, and native asperity. He would not be of the common run of mankind, slave to cruel circumstance. Rather would he push the boundaries, build castles in the air, constructions of radical design, exquisitely wrought, finely engineered. Solidify them into iron, stone, soar them over water, run them over land, tie them down to earth, to the wonderment of the nation and the glory of Brunel. Big was not enough for him, nor bigger. Best was good enough for a while. The impossible whispered in his ears and sang its siren song to him. He was drawn along with it, singing. Swift flows the tide to the sound of the bell. Is that a name it is tolling as the flow it doth swell? It rings once more, oh hark to its knell, for the name it is tolling is that of the great, the incomparable, the exalted Brunel.